This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. Arguably the number one cuck boy. Joining me as always in the High and Mighty Studios is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus, gnawing on a bone. Yep, take a break to sniff into the mic. My guest hooked me up there with the audio interface there. Guys, joining me in the High and Mighty Studio for the first time, former improv student turned author turned, well, we'll hear all about her wild ride. Guys, Caitlin, I panicked in the middle of Katie or Caitlin. Caitlin Brodnick is in the studio, baby.
Hi. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for today's topic, though. We're not going to talk about it the way we normally do. No, but we will be talking.
You can do whatever the fuck you want.
I can I?
You really can. This is your life.
I've been a fan of boobs my whole life.
And me too. Yeah. Most people, even if you like the other body parts, a lot of people love the boob.
Yeah. Boobs are like inobjectable. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If you are not attracted to women, boobs are still like not a problem.
Fun.
I could get where like if like vaginas or butts could be like a little much. But if you're not,
you're not into women, stick your face in a boob. You can eat as close as possible.
Nutrition, eye candy. It's like they're everything
texture.
You need. To, or as we learn, also dangerous.
Yeah, also could kill you. You never know.
But come on, anything can kill you these days. Caitlin, before we get into talking boobs, which is going to be, so I can't wait any longer. But first, let's read some 5-star reviews of my podcast. So how this works is I tell people to rate me 5 stars and roast me in the comments. It's a real grab for stars. I don't even understand how iTunes podcast works or Apple podcasts, whatever they call themselves now. But here's some 5-star reviews where people really shit on me. So Katie, Caitlin, whatever, author, Gino has the clap. Yawn crayfish is just like the song The Clap from Get 'Em to the Greek. Kind of fun on the outside. Wow, deep cut. But wander too close and he'll irrevocably stain your DNA worse than Cosby. Shame this man from every theater and car window before Strong Island makes a comeback. Wow.
DNA.
Wow.
This guy really ran the gamut.
Yeah, I know. He brought up Strong Island. He brought up DNA, compared me to Cosby. But the craziest thing is that his reference is a song from the movie Get 'Em to the Greek.
I also don't know that.
Like the Russell Brand, Jonah Hill movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like not old enough to be a funny reference. No. And it's
also when we first like figured out Russell Brand, like when he was just kind of becoming big before he kind of crashed a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think it was like the beginning of his career. Yeah. Like we all loved him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah. And we were like, what if refreshing guy?
Let's give him a full movie. I don't think it'll be annoying. Oh, never mind.
Hi, okay. Stop tweeting.
Well, at least he's no longer annoying.
Right.
I love Russell Brand, to be fair. I do. But he is one of those people that I find like.
I get nervous sometimes. I'm like, I really agree with a bunch of stuff. And then he'll say something. I'm like, ooh, Russell, do I really want to read this?
Yeah, that's how I feel about Bill Maher, too, where I'm like, yeah, Bill Maher, man, that's a pretty fun show. You know. And then all of a sudden he's like, well, here's the thing about black people. And you're like,
Bill. Cut it off.
please. I'm not comfortable saying that. And if I'm not, you should never be. I'm a terrible person.
Come on, Bill.
All right, here's one. Comedy Bang Bang Without the Comedy by Condor 123123. Job Gubris watched Scott Aukerman have a good podcast and decided to replicate it without using effort or charm. Living pizza dough, Job Gubris will disappoint you constantly by telling you he's funny, but then not proving it as he labors for each breath. You're my hero and thanks for my podcast. All right. Yeah, thank you.
Sometimes it's like they just want to be a part of it. So they'll say something that's not really. I listen to this podcast. I am a fan. So sometimes I listen. And I'm like, come on, guys. You really like him.
Yeah.
They just want to be called on.
Yeah, they want to be called out. And then like sometimes people are like, they're clearly like a little maybe shy or a little social. They don't really have the graces. And they're like, okay, I think I know it. He's a dumb fuck who's going to die. And you're like, okay, guys.
Love you forever, John. Yeah. Yeah.
Demonstrate some sort of, you don't have to.
I think this is a great idea, though, because I have to get reviews for my book, and I can't say, like, this girl's a fucking idiot, because people do read it, and they won't get the book, but I'm like, this is so smart.
This is so, because I'm hoping, I'm praying that the iTunes algorithm just cares about the stars.
It's all about the algorithm.
There's no way a computer can read these reviews and be like, actually, everything is negative about this guy. Let's get him the fuck out of here.
I know. Fuck that.
Anyone who knows how podcasts work, tweet at me and explain
tell us.
That.
We
yeah,
don't
please.
Know.
All right, here, last one. This is by loved by few, but the review is by Hot Girl with Mustache.
Oh,
Hot Girl with Mustache. That just reminded me. There was a really cute girl with a mustache who she had we called it like squirrel hair. You know, like a blonde girl or redhead has just like a little bit of
puff.
Fuzz. When you're like 20, you know, you don't know to get rid of that stuff in the
90s. No, you don't know anything.
So you have it and you're like, oh, she's really hot, but I'm pretty sure she has a mustache.
But it's going to be fuzzy when I kiss her.
Yep, I hooked up with Fuzzy Girl with a Mustache. And Hot Girl with a Mustache, maybe it's the same one. Her review is, or his review, if he's going by a different name, their review, Latinx review, will be dead come winter. 5 stars. We'll send flowers.
Wow.
I like that one.
I love
winter
that
is coming.
One. Yeah, and it's also like, is it will be dead, like you will be dead, or like we all will be dead?
It's possible.
Or like it's like a prophet with a mustache. Like, what is so many levels?
If there was someone who could predict the future in society, it should be a hot girl
with
a mustache. Like, you're so mystical. Exactly. And I know what the future is.
I am fuzzy and ferocious. And I know when you die.
Fuzzy and Ferocious is also the very specific porno movie.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool, cool.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the word furry. I fucked up.
You know what? It's going to come out next week, I'm sure.
Either way, it's being made.
Either way, it's happening.
Listeners, shitheads, rate me 5 stars on podcasts. Roast me in the comments. And you, too, can have your iTunes handle said out loud on the podcast. What a dream come true.
That is cool.
That is true. That's cool. But now, enough about me. We'll try to talk about you while I scream my own personal shit over it the whole time. But we know each other from way back in New York. I coached a practice group of yours. Is that correct?
And I was a crazy fan of FWAND. It's still my favorite team, period.
Oh,
you should listen FWAND, to the most. Right? I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God,
wait,
what if
is
you
that
weren't
the right
on
name?
It? Yeah.
No,
it's
no.
My favorite.
FWAND was a great team. And a recent episode of my podcast, I had Shannon O'Neill and Kevin Hines on, and we talked a lot about FWAND.
Okay, great. I haven't heard that one yet.
Dominic Dirk has just texted me. He goes, I felt like that podcast was for the 6 people who have been on Mailer Demon and FWAND.
Yeah. And or like, had watched it, who grew up at that time.
So then you get, were you guys D5? Was that you or no? Was that someone else? I coached so many random practice groups with so many random names.
We were like Ohio, and then we were Tonka. And then,
yes, Tonka, I remember.
Yeah, and it was just like, it was like so funny. So right when like all of our teachers and like everybody that were coaching us, then everybody moved to LA and we were like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Like, we're not like at the level yet to be like doing like being on Herald teams. But I remember just being like, oh, there they go. Those are our favorites.
Goodbye.
There's great people everywhere.
Yeah, they're still there. There's still great people.
It.
There's new great people coming up in both every city. Every city's great. Everyone's great.
Yeah, everybody's great.
Good
Please
guys
love
on
us.
All the sides. Good people on both sides.
True.
But we wanted to talk about boobs today. Well, specifically, I want to talk about boobs every day. You want to talk about boobs because you just wrote a book.
It's crazy. I wrote a book.
Is it out?
Yeah, it's out. It came out September 12th.
So it's out.
It's out. And I thought it was going to come out October for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And they were like, no, like, let's get it out. Let's get it going. Let's just like, you know.
Yeah, you sure?
I'm like, really, guys? I could get some more likes. They're like, no. Trust us.
Well, maybe that's good. Because then maybe like, since it's come out and it'll fade a little bit as time goes on. And then Breast Cancer
it's
Awareness
Month. It's
so
confusing. Month, okay. I mean, the book selling process is insane.
This is great. So it's called Dangerous Boobies.
Yes.
And it's a memoir of sorts. Yeah, I've read a few of the chapters.
It's a comedic memoir, which is bizarre because I'm 33. Like, I should not be writing a memoir.
But it's about a specific specific event in your life. So let's talk a little bit about because this is one of those, this is the thing that like a 10-year-old boy up to 25-year-old asshole boys would make jokes about of like, what? You're getting rid of like breast reduction or like
any change of a breast feels like you're like spitting in God's face or science's face, whichever you believe.
But no one bitches when a girl gets big
augmentation.
Yeah, when she gets big ones no one's ever like, you, that's a spit in God's face. It's like, no, smart move.
We appreciate
juice
it.
Juice these bad boys up.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. We appreciate your huge cans now.
Yeah, and the medical work taken to do that. Yeah. So, okay. So they're dangerous because they gave me like a really high risk of breast cancer.
Yes.
And so that's what everybody's talking about these days about like BRCA, BRCA. So
that's like the Angelina Jolie thing, right?
Which is like, I love saying that because it makes more sense. So Angelina Jolie came out in 2013 in an op-ed piece that was really public about she had the surgery and she lost her mom to ovarian cancer. So I think it's really interesting. I think the people that are very focused on the surgery and pro having the surgery have had somebody go through cancer with, like, they've watched somebody go through treatment.
Right.
They've had a close family member. Yeah. And you know how difficult the road of cancer treatment is. And it can't, it's not always great.
I mean, having a double mastectomy is not great either.
No, but it's certainly so much better.
Yeah. I mean, my mother had one, had a double and removal of lymph nodes because she had breast cancer.
That's the thing is when you get breast cancer, it can spread really quickly to your lymph nodes.
Yeah.
And then you're in chemo treatments and then you have to have a port in your chest. And it's just like all of this stuff and your life is like around cancer recovery and treatment. And I just did not want to do any of that.
Like, there's not like a guarantee you would get it with BRCA either, right? It's like a high percentage.
They said in my lifetime I had an 87% chance.
Yeah, and that's a guarantee.
Like a crazy thing. Yeah, like if I got an 87 on a test, I'd be like, I'm smart.
Yeah, that's practically 100 is what you would say, right?
Basically, it's so close. And also, I'm like a neurotic person that I would walk around like I'd be in CVS, like, oh, I have an 87% chance of dying. Oh, no. Like all those thoughts go in my brain, and they really
don't. I have a 13% chance of not getting cancer.
Yeah, I just can't stop thinking about
it. Too intense, yeah.
And for somebody to like give you that information and like a sheet of paper, it just like is a mind fuck.
I can only imagine, like, because that's a crazy,
you
know, where it's like my dresser smells. I think it's this one T-shirt. Oh, fuck. I love that T-shirt. It's like throw out that T-shirt and your problems are over. And you're like, shit, maybe I'll just have these problems instead. Like, it's so easy to make the, especially the postponing the situation. Like if you're just like
it's hard because your chances don't grow until later in life, so as you get older they grow,
right?
And so that's a positive thing where they're like, okay, if you don't have cancer, you just have a high chance of cancer, you don't have to do anything tonight,
right?
You know, but something to stress about, and then and then something to constantly be going to the doctor for to check on, like I really didn't want a life of like every couple, you know, they say twice a year, go check and see, go get like super wonderful, super high tech screenings for cancer.
Right.
And I just wasn't going to my doctor's appointments. Like I literally wasn't showing up. I was so nervous.
Oh my, because you just didn't want to find out that you did have it.
It felt like, it felt like if I walked into a cancer center, they were going to be like, all right, great. You got it. You have it.
Oh, hey. So how'd they look? Let's wait for the doc. The biggest, like, scariest thing ever.
Or when they say, like, I had them say, like, oh, there's something on the x-ray. We need to have another scan. And I was like, another scan? Like, you might as well say you're dying tonight. Like, that's where my brain went.
Oh, I can totally understand. I get that, though. That's fucking crazy. This is weird. I had an undescended testicle at birth. Like, it just never came into the sac. So they had to do some surgery when I was a couple years old to drop it. And now I'm at a higher risk for testicular cancer. Oh. So I have to, like, check them often, but it's not something that I could like rid of my balls.
No.
And be like, just in case.
No,
it's such a weird, but I could imagine if they were like, look, your best bet to not get testicular cancer is to remove your testicles. I'd be like,
I love these things. They're really helping me out.
You know what? I don't think about them as much as I should.
You know what? I don't appreciate them.
All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, those balls, testicles. They work so hard.
So at first I was like, oh, there's no fucking way I'm getting a mastectomy. There's no way I'm removing my breasts. And then...
I should not remember this, but you had big
huge
boobs.
Huge cans. Yeah. Yes. I had the hugest boobs.
You are, for the listeners, if you can't tell by your cute voice, you're like 4'6" and you had giant cans.
The largest boobs. And it was like, some people like can wear big boobs and like carry it off, but mine just like, I feel like they started under my chin and they went into like below my waist. Like they were just like so circular and big.
It was like belt, boobs, necklace. It was like all you had. Like just a little belly button sticking out.
That's really like, some guys love that. Like my husband was into it, but I was also like, I couldn't move. Like I felt like, I was like, I always had to cover up because when you want to be sexualized, you want to be sexualized. But then if you're like going to a meeting,
you don't
like,
often want to be sexualized.
No, I don't. Me personally, I'm not like dying for it. And so I'd be covered up and I'd look like pregnant or homeless or both. So I'm like, all right.
Just generally thick.
Yes. And round. And there's nothing wrong with that. I just felt like I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't like I got to like lavish in hamburgers and I earned this thickness. It was like, I could be as thin as I wanted or like diet like a crazy girl and then still have huge boobs. So it wasn't like I was like, it wasn't my choice. It wasn't my hard-earned fat.
Right.
Which is fun, and I wanted to enjoy that.
It was a blessing and a curse. Yeah. Giant cans are that, right? Like back issue stuff?
Major back issues. I have like a little scoliosis, so it was like always, I was always tired and like, I'd have to have like a million bras and contraptions. And so some people would think it's really cool and like they're cool for a second. And then when you have them all day, you're like, these are the worst.
Yeah, they're cool for an evening.
Yeah, an evening.
It's almost like if you want to tell a dude like, oh yeah, I love big tits. It's like, cool, live with them.
No.
Try going through life with them.
My husband used to hold my boobs up in the shower when we would shower together and it was like the best gift in the world.
I was like such a...
Do it to anybody, everyone, do it. And you're just like, it's like, well, you feel weightless for a second. And
yeah, you start slowly floating off the ground.
And I was like, my life's my own.
Like overhead camera shot, like yeah. La La Land, as your husband holds your tits
Arthur
in the shower.
Me and Arthur are really having a moment.
Yeah, Artie's a real chill dude.
He's a snuggly dog, yeah. Everyone. No one can see, but he's great.
Yeah, he's so fresh. Yeah. He's fresh he's to so death, sweet. As we say.
Fresh to death.
But was this decision crazy? Like, were you were in a serious relationship?
I was in a serious relationship. Literally, my husband, like, when he saw my boobs for the first time, he was like, I think I believe in God. Like, he really, like, really loved them. And it was, like, a wonderful thing. But also in our relationship, I was, like, always talking about, like, so when I grew up, I had all these family members die of cancers. My dad's the only living person in his family. He's lost both parents and both sisters to cancer. And when I was and so it was just like a very much a part of my life and my psyche. And so I didn't realize it, but it ended up being a big part of our relationship. Like I would talk about it a lot. I would talk about my fears of the future. What would happen if my kids saw me go through cancer treatment? Like, it turns out I was kind of obsessed. And so
it was on my mind.
Yeah,
to
a
say
lot.
The least.
And like,
yeah.
When I told him, I was like, I think I was so nervous to tell him I wanted to get the surgery. And then he was like, great, because this is like a real drag. It's like a real fucking bummer. Like, we're in our early 20s and you're always crying.
Bad news, hubby. I will find something else to be stressed about.
I know. I'm very good at it. But thank you. But I didn't realize what a big deal it was. I thought it was something I was hiding, which I can't hide anything. I'm like the Miss Oversharer. Like I tell the like lunch lady everything. Like I just there's nothing secretive. So he was like, yeah, this is a major thing that I obviously see is driving you crazy. And he was like, you know, whatever makes you feel better, like if you really like think through, because I do make crazy rash decisions. Like I just like I'm very emotional and I love like running into decisions. But he was like, okay, if you... whatever you want. Like, let's really go over and make sure you feel very comfortable, but then do whatever you want. And I was like, you're so hot.
That's literally my entire so role sexy. As a husband is like, yes. All right, Tiff. Okay, yes. I understand you want to do that, but do you want to like talk about it for a day?
Yes.
Then do this thing? Because it's rash. It's intense.
And it's great. Yeah. And it's like that like permission, but like acceptance and acknowledgement that like, I know this will be a big deal to you. Or I understand you as a person. I understand you're emotional and you have a lot of feelings.
Right.
I appreciate it. So I'm going to like be thoughtful with you. It's just so great. It's like so hot. I love him. He's just the best. I'm so fucking obsessed with him. We've been together for like 11 years.
Dude.
And married for almost 6.
We've been married for almost 5, been together for 14.
It's the fucking best.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know anything else. So
no, I don't. And I like really love, like that's so funny. I was on a pod with a friend talking on a podcast. And
what? You're doing
know,
other
like,
podcasts?
Cool,
to be fair,
guys.
I've had a few other guests. So
okay,
okay,
well, that's odd. But I get it. No, and I was saying like, oh, I fucking love my husband. And they were like, wow, really? Like people get shocked when you say you are crazy about your significant other. I'm like, I'm a huge fan. He's so cool. He's so badass.
It is weird.
People are always like, whoa, that's
we like
different.
Genuinely say shit to each other. Like Tiff will genuinely be like, do you think anyone loves each other as much as we do?
I know.
And we're like, no fucking way. And it's I feel like everyone else, most people who are married probably do.
Well, you hope.
I would like
But then like
so.
A lot of people are just like, meh, it's
yeah.
fine.
Well, I mean, based on my experience in marriage, it's I've had one wife and one set of parents and we have a good marriage.
Yes.
The other people, my parents, not so much.
You never know. I know.
Actually, here, this is an interesting talk about oversharing and also ties in. My parents had a terrible marriage. They didn't really get along. It was kind of annoying. And they like always joked about getting divorces. Like once we were
that's
all old
as
enough.
A kid.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Because you're like, that's not funny. And where's that coming from? But you have to laugh because they expect you to, when they make a joke, they expect you to laugh.
Our family got like the kids got like so intense that we were just like, yeah, fine. Like do it now. Like,
yeah, honestly, just stop.
And then when I was like 19 or no, maybe I was like 22, my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer.
Okay.
And she had to like end up going through all the shit you talked about.
Yes.
Chemo, ports, lumpectomy, double mastectomy,
it's
all
so
that.
So intense.
Ab mesh, what like all the shit that she had to like her entire body is rebuilt in her torso. And she was really sick for a while and dealing with all that and all the, they don't even talk about shit. Like getting chemo is like, if you got chemo, separate of any cancer, chemo can fucking kill you. It can like,
chemo
destroy,
is really, cause it
fucks
it's
up my,
job,
my mom's liver is still fucked up from like she has.
So its job is to kill the cancer cells. But what they do is it's sort of like casting a wide net.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it can affect other parts of your body and really poison the other parts. So that's why. Also, my thing with cancer is like they, you see these women who are like some badass women who can like are hiking and rock climbing after cancer treatment and it's all mental and they're incredible. And I was like, I don't think I would have that. I think if I got cancer, I'd be like, all right, we're done.
Yeah,
like,
I know. It's I'd kind be just of, like watching Fault in Our Stars and crying every
I'd
night.
I'd be like, I knew it. I'm not worth it.
Oh, I have cancer. I can finally smoke weed now.
I know. I have cancer. I'm never moving.
I know.
So I don't, I mean, like I feel like some, like your mom sounds pretty badass because if you can get through that, that's, that's
yeah, she
amazing.
Went through it. And, but what was crazy was it like saved my parents' marriage in a weird way because my dad had to like kind of take care of her and you can't leave. But then
some people do those fuck faces. But
When she got better, she was like, now we're going to, my mom never flew before. Mm-hmm. And she was like, now we're, I'm going to learn, I'm going to get over fear of flying and we're going to fly. We went to like Aruba, Bahamas and Puerto Rico, like. Every year for like 5 years, like because my mom was like the beach, too afraid to fly too far, so we would fly from New York to the Bahamas and like sit on the beach. And we went away 3 times a year for like 5 years, blew like all our money because my mom was like. So that I think helped my parents' marriage. And then my dad, at the tail end of that, got sick with brain cancer, and then my mom flipped and had to take care of him. So they went from like maybe we're gonna divorce to like 10 years.
We are
of,
each
like,
other's caregivers. Well, it's pretty
terrifying.
Incredible. Yeah, it's terrifying and it's pretty. Insane because you, that's the other thing too, is like when you get cancer, you're just, you need so much care and help. I needed a lot getting over this mastectomy and all the surgery, but like it's so much work for the family. So I was, I had so many family members pass away that we were also like there with them while they were getting through cancer treatments.
Yeah.
And so as a caregiver, that's kind of, that, it really is a mind fuck because you're just like, you can't physically do anything but be there for them. And sometimes people want you around and sometimes they're like, please leave me alone.
Dude, yeah.
And you just, you don't, there's nothing you can physically do. And I think that's the most stressful thing is you're just there.
And then also the hard part is, and rarely does the not, this complaint angle doesn't come out, but it's like, you can only just be there and being there is destructive. Like it's so hard to just be there and see someone die. And like I did it with my father. I did it with all of my grandparents are dead before 80 from cancer. My father died at 50 something years old with cancer. My mom was diagnosed at 40 something with cancer. It's like
so intense.
And everyone says Long Island is like a cancer haven because of like
they
don't
have really
know
good so, centers.
Yeah, they have really good centers because there's a lot of cancer on Long Island. They say it's because of like my mom does like the breast cancer, the Susan G. Komen walk in like Hither Hills or whatever, or where the Sunken Meadow.
Yeah.
And there's like 10,000 people there wearing
so
like pink
many.
Survivors and shit like that. It's like, it's fucking wild.
It's insane. And also like everyone I know has had a family member or a close friend or a close family member deal with cancer. Like it's also something that's so, I think that was the hard thing that I had, like as like a young person and comedian, I was like, I don't want this reality. Like I just like, when I got the BRCA mutation diagnosis, I just like got trashed. I just got so fucked up for years.
That's the
years.
Way to deal with most problems.
Yeah, I was like,
for years?
Oh, 3 years.
Oh.
I was so bad. I had to like get sober, get treated. Yeah, I went to the hospital. Like, I was fucked.
Whoa, that's an, because that doesn't, you are too cute and peppy for
well,
me to imagine.
Well, a lot of people don't think alcoholics have blonde highlights and are fun and young, but we are.
Oh, that I can attest to.
Yeah, it depends.
But that's crazy. So you went through like a fucking heavy period?
Real
there?
Rough. I think I was always like, I love drinking. It was just like, I always loved it. And it was kind of fun to like check out. But I remember like I had a mission now and I had an excuse and I had a reason to like get out of my reality. I was like, tonight has to be the best night of our lives because like I could die tonight.
Right.
Even though I was not dying, it felt.
You didn't have cancer.
No, I didn't have cancer, which was also, I felt really guilty not having cancer. That's another crazy thing. Like I didn't want to go to a cancer center for even therapy that they offer for BRCA carriers. But I felt like I don't want to take time away from these incredible women and men who are actually fighting cancer. Like I felt really fraudulent.
Right. And I would feel the same way. I'd be like, but I only have pre-cancer. Don't deal with me.
Yeah, it's just
me.
Like a high risk that I think about constantly. So like don't stress out.
It's don't worry. Because there is like that thing where it's like when you're like, I was saying to someone the other day, it's like when my food is wrong, I'm like, I finally have the nerve to say, like, actually, but I honestly, take your time, spit in it, do whatever you want. I don't want to be like a problem. Like, I can't.
Like, I still really want to be your friend. Like, we're chill and it's fine. Yeah. It's not about you.
So cool. I'm going to tip over 20% because you made a mistake and I feel guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, always overcompensating.
So I feel like I would be in the same spot as you where I'd be like, forget me. I just have pre-cancer. I'll be over here doing blank. Yeah.
And like, it is incredible. I didn't do this, but I recommend it to every single person. They have these genetic counselors now that they're basically like an incredible scientist and an incredible therapist in one. And you go to them if you want genetic testing, and they sit with you and they explain the whole thing to you and go over like all of like the feelings you might have.
You just grabbed the loudest toy.
I know. You're so loud.
I always forget to put this thing away when we're doing podcasts.
He's so cute.
But it's his favorite.
I mean,
but too bad, bud.
Come here.
Go find anything else.
Yeah, so genetic counselors are like so badass, and they help you with everything, and they talk it through. They talk it through how to handle things with your family, what your future might be like, when your risks start to grow. Like, they're so wonderful.
Oh, that's wild.
And so when people like send in, so now they have a lot of tests of like, you can do like online, you can send in a sample, like a cheek swab. And I always say like, I don't like those. I don't think they're great, because when you get a test result back like a piece of paper that's that intense, I don't think anybody is actually prepared. You can say you're prepared, but then when that is all of a sudden your life truth, it is so stressful.
It's nice to hear it from a person.
Yeah, live, and also just a person that goes like, okay, these are very scary statistics. This is actually the age you need to start worrying about it. This is what we can offer you. Here's a therapist that is specifically geared towards BRCA carriers. This is like, so they have an amazing group of resources that you don't necessarily get when you get a printout.
Right. That makes sense.
And I, as like an emotional person, like sometimes I like read over like medical information. I just get, it gets like blurry and I'm dyslexic. And I'm like, oh my God, I have like retinal, you know, face cancer. And it's like, that's not, it's just like, I get all these like nervous.
I think you might have misread it, Caitlin.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, I do. My elbows are going to fall off.
Yeah. I can understand that. But I'm sure there's also, and there's no, like, I don't even know why I'm thinking this, but I'm sure there's people the other way who are like, I don't want anyone to be around. I want to just read the, I'm sure there's like more people, like logic people who are like, let me read it.
Yes.
Let me go on the internet, search what this means.
Yeah.
Did that fuck you up? Like,
that fucked me up.
Going on the internet, I think, is like the worst thing you could do.
WebMD is like a crazy addiction I had. And I would go on all the time.
And like, are there like BRCA like message boards and shit?
Yes.
Of course. And you're on there and you're like, people are telling, the people who go on message boards to tell stories are telling only the most bad
ones. Only the
most
horrific.
Yeah.
And also that's what I did, why I wanted to do Screw You Cancer.
That was the web series you did?
Yeah, a web series.
Glamour?
With Glamour, and they documented the beginning of the process of my mastectomy. To me, because I went online myself, because the only research I do is YouTube.
Yeah.
And so I was like looking up other people that did it, and it was only negative or breast cancer survivors. And I was like, oh my God, I have a gut feeling, like I have a young, healthy body, a good support system. I think it'll go okay.
Right.
I'm a comedian. Oh, that's all. Even if it doesn't, it's great material.
I can write a book.
Yeah. And so that's when we create Screw Your Cancer. And then there's like so much more to talk about. So I like had to put it all in a book. Also, if you don't feel like reading a medical abstract, you could read like a chapter and like toss the book across the room. Like, you know,
right.
There's no like doctor's appointment with a book. You know,
yeah,
you can sit there
bail.
For 5 years.
Yeah.
Right. It's easy.
But that's what made you want to write Dangerous Boobies, was that you thought you had even more.
Well, there's more. It's like so much more complex. I think there's like so many layers. When I didn't talk about this in Glamour in the documentary, but like I was obsessed with sex. Like I really wanted to make sure that like after I had the surgery, if I was removing natural like sexual body parts, that I could have sex afterwards still. And like
my
husband still think I'm sexy. So,
let's talk a little bit about that, because that's like, boobs are
sexy.
Sex organs. Yeah, they're sexy. They're sex organs in a way. They don't do any like, but there are, pleasure can be
a
so
lot of
I hear.
I know. Through the grapevine, we've saw on message boards.
But so that was a big concern of yours.
Yeah. I was like, so I luckily, thank God, have a great sex life. And I was like, I don't want that. I'm bragging. No, I don't want that to be screwed up from this. Like, what if my husband looks at me and thinks like, oh God, she's like a patient, or I look fragile, or I look delicate, or like he doesn't feel like he can like grab me like he could. And like, just what if the like romance is over? Like, what if it becomes like startlingly sterile in our relationship, because I've heard of that, and I've heard of like couples that have gone through like lulls, you know.
Well, it's also understandable from the other point of view of like all of a sudden someone is presented to you as fragile and you need to take care
I literally
of them.
Was, yeah.
Yeah, and like I could imagine being like, well, I don't want to fuck this right now.
Yeah.
I want you to just get better. Let me know what, like that's totally, like,
I think it happens when right after people have kids. I think like the relationship changes.
Because you see them as a different.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, and then I think, you know, the healing process, everyone's like, okay, like waiting, sort of like feeling it out when you can have that like sexual relationship again. But we didn't have any experience of that. We were like 20s, late 20s. And we were like, I really felt there was a moment where I was like, did I just like bait and switch? Like, did I just like pull something on him? Like I gave up, like we got married with huge cans and I was like, psych, you got a couple of years and now we're changing
them
up.
Perfect. I'm going to switch back to my small penis I had right before I met you.
I know.
Hey, wait, what? That's not how that works.
I liked that one. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because I had huge cans and I wanted to go smaller because I wanted like more control over my figure. Like, and I actually love my breasts that are on the smaller side. They're still like perky and great and really good boobs.
I can attest to that.
I know.
With the inappropriate level of talking about a married woman who's in my house.
To a married man talking about tits. I know.
Yeah, they're great.
They're great. Yeah. I mean, they're still like, doable. I mean, like doable, fuckable. But I mean, like, they're
literally, you are talking about what I believe is called intermammary intercourse. Is the
really
fancy term for titty fucking?
Titty fucking. Cool. I like that. But yeah,
you might be the first person that's brought up titty fucking on this podcast that wasn't me.
I brought it up as soon as I walked in the door.
You walked in the door. You're like, your brother was supposed to come by. Shout out to your brother,
Connor Brodnick. Great listener. Great guy.
He was gonna come with you, and you were like, I'm actually glad he's not here so I can talk about titty fucking. And I was like, get in the studio, get the mics out. One of my favorites. Yeah.
I mean, it's great. So yeah, it's still possible. It's still wonderful. But in that, during
so,
all
so
the
you
time
have the
before,
opportunity when you get your, they're like, so you're going to get new breasts
and you get to choose it.
But are you, and you're not like, let me get the F cups again.
Never. No. Because also an F cup in an implant, like it's different than natural. Like, can you
that's
imagine?
That's like a fucking ball.
Yeah. It's like a Dolly Parton mistake. Yeah, it's just sort of what,
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what do I, so then I had to think about, I was such a pervert. I looked at boobs forever. Like I was like, now that I'm creating a boob, what boobs do I want? And I was like, do I want the 70s boob that are kind of like angular and hang to the side?
Oh, I love those. You know? Ski slope tits where kind of like the nipple is pointed up at the end.
And they're just sort of like, and they're almost all in sepia tone. Like they're just like very like casual.
I describe those as European.
Yes. They're gorgeous. And like, I was like a creep. I was like working out in the gym and this like, obviously a European person who's comfortable with her body is like changing and I'm staring at her tits and I'm just like, I'm like, nice. And you're comfortable in your body. Like, but then I was like, okay, well, I'm getting fake boobs. Like maybe I want to just like go full like 80s stripper fake boobs. Cause like as a child of the 90s, like big round and circular boobs were really big.
Not a problem.
Yeah. So I was like, maybe I want that. And then I actually picked the wrong breast size and they had to do a revision.
No.
Cause I don't know what I'm doing. Cause I'm a comedian. I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything.
Well, yeah, obviously. I don't think you should be in charge. Like, I'm not a I fucked up my liver transplant because I'm not a doctor. I'm a comedian. Well, you weren't supposed to be doing that.
No, but
so you chose the wrong boobs. And then you said someone stepped out and then went, you chose poorly.
Yeah. Then we had a bunch of my peers. So right after you have your surgery, after any surgery, you are puffy. Like a person is puffy, you have extra fluid, all this shit. So when I was choosing my size of breasts, I really liked the size that they looked at the time. So I did a thing called spacers where they slowly inflate a like semi-permanent implant in your breast. And then when it's the size you want, they then put the real implant in. And the thing is that the breast is held behind your chest muscle, a thin part of your chest muscle. And I thought that was disgusting. But then my doctor said it was like a little cocoon, like it was like a really healthy place for your implant because there's blood vessels and tissue. And I was like, a cocoon's amazing. Oh, I was like, you've met some crazy ladies before. You know how to talk.
It's a little boob burrito.
I know,
it's
a boobie burrito, a little blanket. So while the spacing process was happening, which was like a couple of months, I said to my doctor, like, I love these. These are perfect. And she kept saying, I think you should go a little larger. And I was like, no, I know myself. Women's rights. Like, I choose me. And I was so...
I'm sorry, but I already had big tits. I think I know what I'm talking about.
I know everybody thinks they're cool, but I experience it. So then a year went by and my body like deflated. The implant like kind of sunk backwards.
Like settled.
Yeah, everything settled. And I looked like the boob like almost looked like it was like over overzealous like armpit fat. Just like it looked really bad. And it looked like the boobs and like my torso looked like two sad frowny emoji eyes.
Okay, no, I can see it now.
It's just gross. Yeah, and it was like kind of square and rectangular. Like it just wasn't right. And
I would be fucking... You gotta be kidding me. I gotta do this shit again.
Well, and I also felt like really dumb. Like I was really fighting for these smaller breasts. And then I went to the doctor and she's like, yeah, we should have gone larger.
Oh.
And I'm like, I was so embarrassed. And then to get this other surgery, it's like, it's not like I'm fighting.
Now it's just aesthetics.
Yes. And that's I don't know what tits work for me.
Right, right. And then you're like, that's hard for you to be like, I got it. It was not an easy surgery.
No. And then also like family was going to come. I need them to help me walk my dog. My husband have to take up a day or two of work. So it was also like, hey, can everybody rally around me? Because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Like, and at its core, you're like, hey guys, I got
ugly tits.
I needed my tits to be just a little bit nicer.
I know. It's
like, yeah. And you were like, because there is that part of you that's like, just be thankful you don't
exactly
have cancer.
And, exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of that guilt. And I talked to a bunch of women that said like, well, we don't really know. If you haven't done this before, you have no idea what to compare it to. So you're like, oh, maybe this is what it looks like. Maybe this is what surgery is after, you know, preventative surgery. Like, yeah. But my doctor was like, no, it's not a perfect science. That's the thing that she has to keep telling her patients, apparently, is that you can have a couple revisions because we're trying to figure out how your body will adapt to this new thing.
Right, right. And it's not like you get the surgery done and then you can, at that moment, eyeball exactly what they're going to be like.
Oh, you have no idea.
Cut up and
and you're like blurry. I was on tons of pain meds, right, so right. I'm like, I like everything.
These are great. We haven't put the other one in yet, ma'am. Oh, all right, fair enough. All well, right, this well, one so far is
I know.
Good.
I just can walk around with one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, lather up, bear chasers. It's your favorite part of the podcast when I do ads for Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon is not only the only company that wants to advertise on my podcast. They are the only company that I use for my underwear and socks. Their underwear fit my weird lower body perfectly. They're comfortable around the waist. They don't fold over and cut you in half like most underwears do to other bullshit fat guys. These fit snug. These vent well. These wick water well. Now, don't ask why I need to vent my crotch and wick moisture away, but look, I run hot. I'm a big boy. These underwear are comfortable. Mack Weldon makes comfortable, cool-looking underwear that I don't want to get into it too much, but my wife really likes the way they look on me. They zhuzh your package in a nice way. The fucking socks are super short. Can't see and comfortable, and they stay on. They have this little thing in the back of the heel that keeps them on, and they are perfect for a little showing a little ankle, showing some gams this summer season. If you're a fat dude who wears shorts all the time, you need to get good, dope underwear and nice short socks. I don't even get me started on the Mack Weldon sweatpants. I wear them every flight I take. Whatever. I don't have time to get into all the Mack Weldon products that I love. But do yourself a favor. Go MackWeldon.com. Order yourself some drawers, some socks, some sweats. Use promo code Mighty. Enjoy a little percentage off on your man right here. Uncle Fuckboy himself, Johnny G. Get your Mack Weldon's on. Send me a picture up close of your bulge in your Mack Weldon's. Actually, don't do that. Or do it.
So then I couldn't choose nipples because I have no nipples. Isn't that nuts?
You couldn't choose nipples?
Still have not chosen nipples and I have no nipples.
Whoa.
So I have Barbie boobs. They're just like perfectly circular and round and there's no nipples. So for me, it was like, my boobs were like a ginormous U, like a huge U, and then they cut it right through the middle and sealed it up like an envelope. And so she's like, oh, we could save your nipple, but it'll be in your armpit. And I was like, bitch, no. That's disgusting. Oh, like the way they moved my skin around and everything, the nipple had to go. And some women can save their nipples, and some women who have, like, maybe they're having the same breast size that they had before.
Right, you can, like...
There's all kinds of things.
Keep the structural nipple integrity that is needed.
Uh-huh, and it's called nipple-sparing surgery, and people have it, but not me. And they're like, oh, you can choose your own nipple, but that is so much responsibility that I cannot handle. I don't know what to do.
Oh, shit.
Because, like, do you want, like, puffy 70s nipples? Do you want, like, itty-bitty, like...
Me?
Mm. I know. What do you want, John? And then I'm like, do I want older nipples I can grow into?
Like, yeah. Let me get, maybe you're thinking about moving to a more tropical climate. Might as well get dark nipples now.
Yes, like let them be pre-tan. Yeah. And like, I just have no idea.
Just don't go with too big of an areola. I think that's a big mistake.
I know. That's the thing. And it's like, you pick your areola size. You pick the color because you can tattoo a color onto it. Then you pick the nipple protrusion. It could be like a flat nipple or like a nipple that's had like milked a million babies.
Whoa, that's
crazy. Isn't that nuts? So the reason all of these options are it's so wonderful is that let's say you only had one breast removed. Let's say you had breast cancer and you just were removing one breast and you're doing surveillance on the other.
Yeah.
You could match it to your natural nipple.
Yeah.
Or if you have like some titty photos from back in the old days, you can have it exactly like how it was before. But like, I don't remember... Really? I don't know.
This is an opportunity. This is like clean slate nips.
I know, just and that's just too much pressure.
I understand. I get that.
I can't. And then I brought my husband with me to an appointment, and I was like, okay, honey, like I opened up literally a nipple book. We went through it. I was like, what nipples are the best? And at the end of the day, he's like, look, I was there. Like the jig is up. Like I was there. You know, I was like helping you like get out of bed to pee. Like,
yeah.
You don't need nipples for me. And right. I was like, all right, that's kind of cool because I can't choose them.
intend to add nipples eventually?
Maybe. I don't know. But the other thing too is because they're not like a regular nipple that if it has a protrusion, it's always going to be like a hard nipple.
It's hard, yeah.
So you always just have like cold tits looking the whole time.
Right, which is like maybe some people, that's an appeal to some people. Right. But
then also it's like, I don't want to be at my kid's like soccer game. Like there's, you know, hard tits Brodnick over there. Like,
yeah, you're like dropping your kids off at school and she's like, Jesus Christ, turn the air conditioning off in this minivan, lady.
That woman's very aroused, like at a teacher meeting.
Oh, that's yeah, it's something I didn't even think. My wife was telling me yesterday that women are getting their nipples pierced now so that they it's be hard all the time.
Oh.
Like people are, because it's like aesthetically a choice for clothes.
And I mean, I guess it's pretty, but like, so the cool thing is that when they put the implant like under your pec muscle, you don't have to wear a bra. It sits there naturally. So there's no like, when a person gets a regular like breast augmentation, it's on top of the breast tissue. But for the mastectomy surgery, they remove all the breast tissue. So they have to put it in a place to not, that the implant won't move up and down on your chest. So it is like a muscle bra. So I don't have to wear, I'm not wearing a bra. I don't have to wear a bra. Yeah.
Which is used
great.
To have to wear like
a whole apparatus.
Equipment.
It was. I used to have
to have a crane set up on my
like specialty
T-set.
Online, yeah. Buying them, and it was
Jeanette
like all this.
Jeanette Braz is apparently the.
Oh,
big
really?
Lady. Rachel, your foreword writer was the one who told me about.
Them. Oh, really? She's so great. She's so badass.
I managed to talk about boobs a fair amount with Rachel
you
Bloom.
Should.
I couldn't imagine why.
I know. She's so great. She's just the fucking best. at a show at a place that not boob related.
I was going to tell a story, but I'm like, probably shouldn't.
You're like in a bra shop. You're like, Rachel, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here?
I mean, many reasons. It's very fun.
Oh, that's so interesting. Now, talk a little bit about what are the negatives of what the process you had done.
So for me...
Like, do you lose... So now, nipples, no breastfeeding, right?
No breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And I didn't really care. And then like... I am 5 months pregnant now.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not positive if I'm supposed to say something.
Can,
so before,
yeah.
When I was like, now I'm talking titty fucking with a married pregnant woman in my house is what I wanted to say before.
That's really important,
but I was like,
though.
Let me just leave. Let me leave you know out the what? Pregnancy thing. Just to, but yeah, now you're pregnant. Congratulations, BT Dubs.
You can make a baby without boobs.
Right, turns
it's
out.
It's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
it really
I mean,
was awesome.
So many people don't breastfeed anymore.
Yeah, I wasn't breastfeeding. Neither was my husband. And like, I didn't care at all. And then I had like a moment.
I misheard you. You're like, I wasn't, I thought you meant like, I wasn't going to breastfeed anyway, and you're like, neither was my husband. I was like, yeah, well, that was nice of him.
Oh, yeah.
Solidarity.
Yeah, that weirdo. What was that conversation like?
I insist on breastfeeding my children.
Yeah, I mean, try it. Apparently people do it. I don't know. Yeah, so neither of us as kids were breastfed. We both were formula fed. I mean, I have a sugar addiction, but like, who doesn't? And so
and I'm fine. I'm 4'11" with size double F breasts. Formula doesn't fuck you up.
I went through puberty at birth, and like, I'm just doing really great. Yeah. So we were like, so at the time, when I was in my early 20s, we weren't thinking of having kids anytime soon. And that all of, like, I thought about this surgery for so many years and like went to therapists and went to doctors and talked to family members. So it was a very thought out decision. But then the moment I got pregnant, I had a flippant, like I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, I'm a terrible mom because I'm not even giving my kids like, quote, the world's most perfect food that people think.
Right.
And my husband's like, what are you talking? Like, what are you talking? Like, that isn't anything accurate. Like, that's not really how you've ever felt before. Like, so I think when you're pregnant, like, you get these like flush of hormones and immediately you feel like a guilty person. Right, like, right, you're already right. Like, I'm a terrible person. I'm a terrible mom. Yeah, I'm not even a mom.
I can't believe I'm
yet.
Not vegan right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm not.
Had
yeah.
Turkey yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, drinking from a fresh waterfall. Like, yeah. It was just like so stressful. Right. So I've had like a thought of that and then it just like quickly went away. Cause I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to get cancer for my kids. Like, I'm not going to get breast cancer.
Right, you're going to be around longer. Yeah. They're not going to have to deal with that.
They're going
to
be annoyed by me never leaving. So yeah. It's like,
they're not going to get
like
a weird pink ribbon tattoo on
Yeah. It's fine.
I might be speaking from experience.
I love it. Get those tattoos. Come on up here. So that is fun. And then I was like nervous. I was like, oh, what if like cutting my boobs off means like it's harder for me to have kids? Like, because right. like there's less estrogen because you don't have that. And we got pregnant like immediately.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah, because it's fine. Your ovaries are your
yeah,
sex organs.
It's like,
it's
fine.
Not like, it's not
fine.
Like,
well, I was
hormones.
Worried like maybe the hormones were, I don't know. Like,
yeah, no, any major change to your body
yeah,
is
I didn't
anything
know.
Could happen. And then like you lose the like nipple
so
pleasure.
So use the nipple
right?
pleasure, but you, okay, so I always say it feels like. When you, so right after surgery, when they remove everything, they also sever a bunch of nerves. So after surgery, you don't feel that much in your breast. And so doctors say, like, don't cook over a hot flame, which I'm like, fine, I'll order takeout.
You're gonna fire yourself.
Yes. And exactly like that. And then I know. I was like, yikes.
How flashy. Right,
yeah.
She does. She
yeah, with the pants.
Yeah.
Oh, her. So then. Also not to wear underwire bras because your underwire could poke you and you not feel it.
Oh, jeez.
So, but underwire bras are like the best looking. I just think they're really cute. So I just cut out the underwire of all my bras.
Oh, and it's smart.
Like,
just in
woo-hoo.
Case.
Yeah. Yeah. But so that was in the beginning. Now I'm having a lot more feeling. It feels just like you're
how
touching
your
skin.
How long ago was it at this point now?
I think it was like 3.5, almost 4 years ago.
Wow.
2013.
And now you're getting feeling back? Just
yeah. So what happens is your nerves have to naturally grow back. And in the beginning, it kind of feels like a little buzzing of a nerve, which yeah. is like a weird nervousness. But I mean, I thought that like, oh my God, I'm electrocuted. Like, what's happening?
You're
I don't
getting,
understand.
Like little pins and needles as your nerves
not
like, regenerate.
Pins and needles bad, but you just feel a little zip. Like, you would just feel like something.
Like, they would just be, like, activating or firing
yeah.
or whatever.
And my yeah. doctor's like, that's a great thing because that means your nerves are growing back. And so now I say it's like when you, the feeling is like when you press on your forearm and you can feel the fat and you can feel, like, the skin there.
Yeah.
But then it hits bone. You don't feel inside your bone. So it's right. like that with the implant. You don't feel inside the implant. But still,
okay.
like, I had to say to my husband, like, I want you to grab my boob. Like, I still right. want you to, like, I still, like, have the sensation of like having your boobs be like adored or grabbed or like enjoyed.
Yes.
You still want that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so that
fair.
Was like
yeah.
something that I had to be like, you got to do this now.
Yeah. There's not really any like sexual nerve endings in your butt. Cheeks,
yeah,
and
yeah.
it feels good to get your butt cheeks
right.
grabbed, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's yeah. just like, it's still.
There's no sexual. Now we're getting a little too personal here.
What else?
But there's no sexual, like.
Feeling in my butt. All my nerves are cut.
There's no sexual nerves in your hair follicles, but yeah. for some reason, it feels good to have your hair pulled,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, that's a major important thing. But yeah, so that was sort of like a crazy thing. And then. But yeah, I was worried of all of this stuff before. I have a chapter in the book that's just like all about fucking. And like, I'd say like my dad and grandpa like cannot read it. And my grandma read it and she goes, she's British. And she's like, it was quite raw. I'd say it was quite raw. Because I talk about my favorite way to have like my favorite position. And like,
because yeah, you're coming at it. Because like as a short person with big boobs, like
yeah.
there are some ideal positions. There are some,
yes.
you know, and like now you have to like kind of shift your repertoire around.
Yeah. And also
bit.
Like right after surgery, I was just like, when can I have sex again? Like, I was really nervous. Like, so we were married, I think, like a couple years. And I was like, oh my God, like, I want to have this. Like, every fiber in my being says, like, it's time for the surgery. I'm younger. I'll heal faster. I want to start I was always afraid of dying of cancer. I wanted to, like, start the process now of feeling relief.
Right.
I wanted to give relief to my family. And it was like, but I felt really guilty that the time frame was like my husband only had a certain amount of time before he was then now taking care of a wife with yeah. a full blown surgery. And so I was like, when can I have sex again? I think I had it like 2 weeks after surgery. I was still in pain meds. It was great. I was like all doped up. Like, this is lovely.
Out. Yeah. Ow, ow, ow. Go, go, go.
Okay,
ow,
keep,
ow, ow.
Then,
keep
you know,
going.
No, that's a good hurt. That's not a good hurt. Yeah.
Ow, ow, ow. No, that's a positive. Trust me.
Yeah.
Ow, ow.
I love it, but yeah.
Oh, so that's wild. Yeah.
That was like really important. And so I think like some some people, what one woman in her review was like, I wonder if her husband knows how much sex she talks about in the book. And my husband's like, yeah, I helped her edit it. Like, he's like a very smart person.
I was also there.
Yeah, I was there. We were having the sex.
I am the other protagonist in that chapter.
Yeah. And but he was great. So also, like, writing the book is like a totally insane thing because, like, I am not a strong reader. I am like, and I can, it's hard for me to finish books. So I was like, I have to write this. It's basically everyone I know is like, it's a day read. Like, it's a really fast book.
It's a beach read.
It's a beach read. It's real quick. Because you don't, like, I put a ton of science in there, a ton of like great, smart, amazing women scientists and doctors.
Hey, I want to say, I read a couple of chapters on the can, this AM. I would like to toss out, you have footnotes.
Yes.
You're a fuck. Like, that makes it academic in a way. Well, you're a renaissance woman here.
There's like a couple academic footnotes, and then the rest are just jokes. And like the first edition of like the first draft of these, of the book, all my footnotes were off. And I was so stressed out because I was like, the joke doesn't make sense. Like, it's like all these like comedy beats. And I was like, the beats aren't adding up.
Come on. Yeah. Please.
So there's like a couple smart footnotes and then a couple joke. Oh, and then awesome. A shit ton of references in the back.
Oh,
because that's. I mean, I want to be as casual and easy for a young person or even a family member of somebody going through it to understand. But also, like, I'm not a doctor, so I have a lot of information from my doctors are really like breaking down, like, this is the percentage of cancer risk for ovaries. And this is like, this is how it affects men. And like, I was very cautious while writing it that I was like, I got my book checked so many times by tons of like really brilliant people.
Because you're literally in over your head, like medicine is not like.
Yeah. I was like, let me write a book on something that I know almost like half of, like just the patient experience.
Well, that's pretty much like, that's funny you say that because that's pretty much what I wanted to do with High and Mighty was like, I wanted to talk about subject, like, bring subject ideas to, and granted some of them are Taco Bell and like Big Trouble in Little China.
That's a big topic. I have not seen Big Trouble in Little China, and listening to that part, I was like, ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, hey, I'll give you a Blu-ray to go. But like for me, I was always like the Judaism episode and like the other episodes I want to do. I want to, and like I did a podcast called The Layman with Scientists where I'm like, I'm not an expert, but I want to help people learn as much as possible.
Right. And it's like when I was first even deciding, so every part during the process, like when I got diagnosed, if I'm going to the doctor for the first time, all this stuff, like I wanted like a girlfriend to be like, this is how it is.
Right.
You know, these are the things you care about. Like before surgery, I got my nails done and I love looking at my clean nails with an IV in my hand. You know, like you have all this other stuff going on that these are the little pleasures I enjoyed. Like I loved really clean, soapy baby wipes, like right after surgery because I felt really sweaty. So just like things that your buddy would tell you.
Right. Or that like someone would be like, hey, Katie, a friend of mine actually went through that.
Yes.
You want to get her on the phone? You're like, hell yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, for some people, like it is intimidating to make that phone call or to meet someone in person. So I was like, let me give them a book. They can literally like go like, oh, what are the top 10 fears she had before surgery?
Right.
Which were all sudden bodily combustion. I guess like I'm just going to like explode on the
you
table.
You said sudden bodily consumption and combustion. In my head, I pictured you meaning shitting your pants.
Oh, I was afraid of that. I was afraid of shitting and peeing myself on the table. I was afraid of peeing all over like the nurse's like nice shoes. I was afraid. So when I also have vasovagal, which is like a response to when you see needles go into your body or blood, your own blood, and you get like all of a sudden your blood pressure drops, you get like really sweaty and you faint. And I have vomited, and I've projectile vomited on a nurse all over her. I have pissed myself. I mean, I like have, and I still got the surgery. Like I don't know.
Wait,
what
so
I'm
this
doing.
Is all not even, that's just other this events just that have happened to you.
Like, I'm just a person who's terrible at this.
Oh, as someone who is the brother and son of a, my brother and my mom are nurses.
Wow.
They are not wearing nice shoes. They know the risk at hand when they walk
that
into a hospital.
That flying room. All
yeah,
over
yeah.
it.
Yeah, they're not wearing good shoes. Don't worry
I
about
just,
that.
Every nurse I went to, I was like, I have vasovagal. I'm going to faint. And they're like, okay. They would get their smelling salts. They would get ice packs. Right. They would like lean me back. Like I had it down to a science.
Like you have to look away.
I have to look away. Yeah. I have to have a conversation. We have to talk about the Spice Girls. Like I literally have to do anything besides looking or realizing that that's happening to me.
I have to talk about the specials. Doctor, you've read, you have a very specific bracelet on. It's like, what is that bracelet for? It's like, oh, I have Visa, and I need to be talking about Sporty Spice throughout the
Yeah, I need to know like what she's doing with her career move and like, where's Baby Spice?
Yeah, and like, is Ginger still hot? I feel like she might have been the most capable
of
falling
like,
off
she
hard.
Maybe needed depression meds. Like, did anybody address that when she was younger? Like, she looked like she was going through it.
Ma'am, please lie down.
Please shut up.
That Union Jack dress was so cute.
I know, those little booty shorts. Yeah, so I that was a big thing too. I wanted all my doctors to like me. That was a crazy thing.
Oh, that's hard.
I really was like, just please like me. Can we be friends? Like, can it be like a casual meeting up with friends for brunch, but you're cutting open my body?
I mean, that's me too. I like try to charm every single person I interact with. I'm like, hey, look, you're about to see my little dick. Can we at least pretend like you're cool with me?
Yeah, like we'll get popcorn. Like, I don't know, people get popcorn, but like, let's just do something.
I have like for the first time in my life, I have a doctor that I like and respect.
Feel comfortable,
I feel comfortable around. And I didn't realize, like, this is the most grown-up thing I've said on this podcast to date. But, like, if you're around my age or in your late 20s and you're still one of those people who don't like doctors or think your doctor's an asshole, honestly, shop around.
Yes.
Getting a real doctor was, like, the best thing that's happened to me.
It's a big deal. I had a terrible doctor at first who gave me all my information. And it, like, really fucked me up. And I was, like, it like changed the way I thought about how I would go through life, how this body, this like sick, you know, could maybe be a sickness one day. And then I found a doctor I love and it all changed everything. And I think the thing is that like I felt like I wasn't smart enough. I didn't know, like, I didn't go to school as long as the doctors did. Like, I didn't know what they know. So they're the experts and I should just shut up and listen to them. And then it's like, no, but if they're a jerk, you can still find somebody else. Like, yes, they are very smart, but
it is your body.
It is your body. Yeah. And if you're feeling off, like, you have to keep, I feel like it is an effort to find a good doctor.
Right. And then maybe good is not the right word. Right. Maybe the guy who's weird is good. But, like, it's for your, whatever you need as a person. Because, like, you know, I come at, like, I know about sports. I don't know much about anything else. But, like, with, like, training or coaches, there are some players who want to be or
yelled
some.
Yeah.
Come on, let's do this. And there's some players who are like, hey, you just need this little, and you need to find that out.
Yes.
And some doctors are cold. Like the first doctor I went to was some dude, and all he talked about was wanting me to be on weight loss drugs.
Ugh,
and I was like, but
insane.
I'm okay with being overweight.
I like myself. I like everything's like, fine.
But it's unhealthy. I'm like, I understand that, but I don't want to take drugs.
No. And those things are so crazy.
It's terrifying to me.
I
mean, not in a rush to take Advil. I've like for sure have needed Ritalin for over two decades now, and I refuse to do it. Instead, I'd rather just be upset
just, like,
about how unproductive I am.
Yeah, just like deal with the feelings. Well, that's the thing too, is like I've been on depression and anxiety medication for years. Like I just have it. And so that was like, for me, I was used to like shopping for therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And like if a therapist sucked, I'd find another one. So I was like, oh, that is like, I compartmentalized that as like, that is something that you shop for. And then for
but
the
doctors,
other side,
you just deal with whoever's
doctors,
the closest.
Doctors, you just are happy that they're smart and they're taking care of you. So that's
so crazy. Yeah. And I feel like it's something, because when you're a kid, you just go to the doctor your mom wants you
to,
or whatever.
And also, hopefully your parents vetted them for you. Like,
right.
I mean, my dad is a physical therapist and had all these friends in the medical industry. So in Maryland, when I was growing up, like, I went to the best people. And it was like, I felt that they were the best because my parents loved them. They would come over, you know, for dinner at our house. Like, I felt very comfortable. And then moving to New York City, just having to figure out those doctors was a whole new experience.
Oh, yeah. My pediatrician lived across the street from me and was also my best friend's mom. So it's really upsetting that, like, I would be like, go to a doctor. And her office was in her house, like attached to her house.
That's amazing.
So I'd go up there.
Just get some antibiotics.
Have my friend's mom touch my balls, make me cough. And then I would be like, is Robbie home? She's like, yeah, he's upstairs. Like,
let's go play video games to check out this uncomfortable moment.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. But I mean, like, that's the life of a kid whose mom is a pediatrician to everyone in town. You're
that's
just like,
great.
Raise your hand if Robbie's mom has touched your balls. It's like 20 kids are like,
that's
in hindsight,
great.
That's brutal. But then, so you just go to the local doctor. Then when you're older and you're like, now I moved to LA. I didn't have a doc. I didn't even have a doctor in New York. I lived in New York. No. I moved when I left New York. I was 30 something years old.
Well, if you don't have to, like, if there's no reason to,
you don't have health insurance.
You don't have insurance. And if you're like pretty healthy, you can go to urgent care.
Right.
But then when it is something that you're like, oh, I think I'll need to see this person more than once.
Right.
It's like you get to say, I need the person to be like, we need to click in a way, or I need to feel comfortable or safe, or that they do think I'm funny, which is very important.
My doctor better think I'm funny.
She better fucking think I'm funny, and this is a good life choice.
I ran into my doctor on a layover in like Minneapolis, like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, but I was
drunk? No,
I was close. I was like heavy dosed edibles. Like I was like, oh, I got to fly. And I like forget with like a layover. It's not ideal to be like super baked for 40 minutes.
And they take so long. Sometimes like you don't know when they hit you. I know.
I've got it all down to a science. I'm actually an expert.
You
got it.
Yeah. And you know your edible. Like
I know I'm good.
Yeah. I used to make great pot brownies, but they would just like all of a sudden fuck you up and I had no idea when they would occur.
Right,
like
that's
I would just be like, and then like I'd just be changed forever.
Former guest of the podcast, John Flynn, was like famous for his pot cookies. And it's like you never knew. Sometimes you would eat one and be like, wow, I'm kind of lit.
Yeah,
and
then
sometimes you would eat half of one. You'd split one with a friend and you'd both be like crawling on a movie theater floor.
Like,
and
you're where'd like, you get this, John? You're like crawling on the floor. There's John tweeting about the movie.
So let's give some advice to some young people here, because specifically that's what we're trying. You're trying to do with Dangerous Boobies is like if anyone has to go through it, here's a lighthearted way to look at
it. Yeah, and just like like breaking it down to be like very simple.
Yeah.
So first of all, you can always like tweet me, email me, call me. I mean, literally, like I just want anybody who needs help, like just come at me.
Like yeah, I went through this.
Yes, and
pay it forward.
Yeah,
there's something about that, and like. This my wife's father passed away a couple of months ago,
and
it was very similar to when my father passed away a few years ago. There was like in hospice. He was the same type of like rough and tumble blue collar dude who's like doesn't want to deal with this, doesn't want to deal with that. And it's like I just went through the whole thing and I was like so happy to be there for my wife and her family where I was like, OK, here's what's going to happen. Relatives are going to start to annoy you because they're going to keep coming up to you and saying it's so sad, it's so sad, even though you're fighting to try to stay happy. I just knew all of a sudden I was like in the
you're
Matrix
like
where I was
expert.
Like, watch, this is what's going to happen. The aunt is going to come.
Yes.
I like figured it all out. And it's like, God, thank God. I wish someone was there for me like that.
Yes.
I'm not bragging about how helpful I was.
No,
but
that's
Tiffany
really important because you are like that. I do think like in with life experiences, like I felt so in the dark in the beginning of this whole thing. And I was like, if somebody had just like held my hand and talked me through it, even like tweeted at me. Like, I just would have been like, okay, it's not. I think the more we can talk about it, also, like, I can't ever shut up. So it's like, I'm going to be talking about it. But the more we do, the less intense it becomes. Like, we kind of chip away at the scariness.
That's how I feel. Just let everybody know. I'll tell everybody all my major issues.
Yeah, my grandmother did not want to know about my sex life, but she does now.
Well, Grandma, guess what?
Grandma.
You can titty fuck. You don't need nipples to titty fuck. By the way, that should have been the title of the
book.
That's
true. I did an NPR interview and they were like, what is, what's another title? And I said, titty, titty, bang, bang. And they got so flustered. Apparently you can't say titties on NPR. And I was like, I'm
bullshit.
Sorry. Yeah. I have all these like tits on parade was like another idea I had.
We did this a lot because I did a bunch of breast cancer fundraisers when my mom was sick. Like I did a bunch of shows at UCB and they were all like tits and giggles, safe at second base, you know, just like all
tits for days,
boob tube, tits for days. Like we just did everything that was like a boob pun. It was real fun.
I think boobs are so funny. And I think boobies, the word is funny. And like
dangerous boobies is very funny.
Thank you.
Because it feels like something a kid would say.
Right.
Like,
I mean, that's how it feels. I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. These
very childlike.
I am very immature and I wrote a whole book. And a reviewer in the Washington Post was like, it seems like a text from your very good friend. Like the book is a text. And I was like, wow.
Thank you. 140 characters.
Wow. Yeah. Thank
Wait,
you.
The Washington Post pull quote is actually really
it's
amazing.
Very nice.
Brodnick is part advocate, part comedian, and part the girl you want to sit next to on the airplane.
Which is
so
sweet.
Because she has huge tits.
Yeah. Because you can look down at it and she like collects crumbs in those. She'll offer you seconds.
That's such a great review. And so
it
true.
It was so nice. No, they were so nice. But and I'm like, that's the other thing. Like you write a book and you're like, I hope I seem somewhat intelligent. Like I hope it isn't like a slog. Like the first edition, my mom was like, yeah, you kind of seem like a bummer here. Like I had to like, it's so interesting because like as a reader, like I get very tired if a book isn't that interesting or I get kind of like it gets heavy or this and that. And like there's a shit ton of chapters in there because I just keep changing the topic.
Right. Well, it's like hard to pick a book back up when it's like a heavy duty. Like you're in like a run of shit. And you're
Well, and I would never, ever have read a breast cancer book, even if it was inspiring right before then. I was like, that isn't my world. I don't want to be a part of it.
Right.
You know, I don't want to the whole thing as I was like, I can't absorb that. And so I was like, what would I have wanted to see? What did I want to do?
Right. You don't have to have the gene or have survived cancer or anything to read this book.
No, it's all
you
about
don't have to even
weird
be a woman.
Yeah. No, you don't. And
you can be a man and read a book.
You can be a man and like read about tits. And there's some fun pictures, and it's great. Yeah.
Although, yeah, page 323, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. 232. I forget what it was, but it's like, if you're just here for tits, pervert, it's on this page.
It's there, and it's like a great pic. Like, it's a cute pic. I'm proud of it.
That's cute. It's cute. So
advice is, the advice thing I would say is, talk to your doctors if you feel that you could maybe have the gene, or you feel afraid or nervous, and then talk to a genetic counselor.
Yeah, or if you've had like a serious history of cancer in your family.
And like, just start to inform yourself. You don't have to make any decision. That's the number one thing, is that like, just informing yourself doesn't mean that the next step is to make a life-changing decision. Like, it might not be the right decision for everyone. You might choose a totally different path. And like, whatever you choose is legitimate because it's your life. Like, right. I could never tell anybody what to do because I don't know their life experience. Like, I grew up with a ton of people dying. So for me, this was like a feeling of freedom, where somebody else would feel like it's like,
somebody else might say like, hey, I'll let it ride and hopefully breast cancer is curable by the time.
Right. Which is like great. And I was like, I want a titty reduction and not to have nipples and like, and then to talk about it forever.
I want no nipples, littler boobs. And I want to feel safe.
Safe.
She's a great woman to sit next to on an airplane because she has no nipples. Yeah.
You never know if she's cold, but she won't stop talking about it.
I mean, do you like? You could use this for the rest of your life. Just like, I'm sorry, but could you get me another beverage? I have no nipples. Just like always using it. Can I cut the line? I don't have any nipples.
Yeah. I'm sorry. My future son like really needs to get in this GED class because I have no nipples.
Where can people find you online? What's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Katie, C-A-I-T-Y, Brodnick.
B-R-O-D-N-I-C-K. Yes.
And I'm the same on Instagram.
Yes.
And I love Instagram.
And the name of the book is Dangerous Boobies. Out now. This podcast might not come out for a week or so, but it's out now.
Yeah, it's out now. Yeah. Rachel Bloom wrote a killer foreword.
It's very funny.
So that's really good. Yes. If you only want to read the foreword, just read it for her.
If you want to read just the foreword, at least buy it.
Yeah, at least purchase it. Rate me on Amazon. Don't say anything mean.
Don't roast her.
I'm the opposite. Yeah. I'm very sensitive.
Rate me. Give me a 1-star, but give me some sort of compliment.
Tell me you love me and that you think my hair looks good.
That's all I need.
That's all I care about.
I'm at John Gabers on Twitter. Tweeted us with if you have nipple suggestions.
Yeah.
Now I feel like I just opened up
all your pictures
photos
of nipples. I know. I was so creepy. I was like looking at like all these like porn pics because I was like, those are cute. Right? That girl's not enjoying herself, but her nipples are great.
That girl seems in duress, but she's got hella good nipples.
That's a good areola nipple ratio.
That must be so crazy.
It's crazy. Also, like, I stare at women's breasts walking down the street. Like, I'm also like a boob expert. And I'm like, oh, those are fake. Like, I can like see and tell, and like, I can like guess the size. It's really,
that's wild.
I'm a pervert.
Yeah, we always joke. My mom is not a sexual woman at all. Yeah. She's a Italian Catholic widow, like pretty much the antithesis of excitement and sex. But when she got her boob job, we'd always be like, "Mom and her fake tits."
I know.
It's just funny to say my fake tits.
Oh, I say
in
it all
reference
the time
to like medically done procedure.
I know. I'm like, guys, I'm great. I have fake tits. Like, and they're like, killing. We're talking about brunch places. And I'm like, I don't care.
I have fake tits.
My tits will go anywhere.
All right. Bottomless mimosas.
Yeah.
Better not go topless because I fake tits.
I know. Whoops. You never know.
Well, Caitlin, thank you so much for coming
for
on
having.
And enjoy the rest of your LA book tour that you're doing here.
I love it.
As always, I'm at John Gabers. We are gabers.com/shirts. I don't think I have anything else coming up. Buy yourself a book. Buy Dangerous Boobies, gang. All right. Bye, shitheads. I am mighty.
That was a HeadGum podcast.